I want to thank everybody for staying this long and all the people who came out to support us, but most especially the panelists, because I had a hidden agenda. I want to be in your circle. So thank you for having me. Michael O'Connor, my vice dean, knows that I can give this talk in about 3 seconds. So I'm going to just try to let you know a little bit about what I teach my students in their very first semester at NYU College of Dentistry. And if you want any further information, you can ask any of the panelists, because I gave them all my sets of slides just as a way of introducing myself to them. And some of the core concepts we've already gone over, I'll just go quickly through them. I want them to know that social justice is the foundation of public health, and we all have a responsibility to do oral health equity. That's part of our challenge. And so, actually, our very first issue of the Journal of the Academy of Distinguished Educators, which we started at our institution, raised this question about oral health equity, and we want it to be core to all of our missions. Susan did such a wonderful job about epidemiology. Her slide deck, I think I'm going to replace for my descriptive epidemiology section. So that's how I got introduced to this topic of oral health. It's because every poor community, as you already know because you're in the room, needs oral health care. And so that's how I got to know Ira Lamster. Back in the day, he only was introduced to me over email. He thought I was Dr. Tillman. Funny, when he found me, I actually had a bigger nose ring and spiky hair back in the day, right, Michael? And so we started doing work on oral health care in Harlem, and that has become my passion. So I'm not going to talk about all of these different programs that we're doing, but I want you to know we have a number of them, and some of the people that are responsible for doing them are right here in the room. We presented these posters during the poster session. Most fun I've ever had at a poster session. And healthy aging. I did my dissertation on preventing falls in older adults. And my sponsor, Jennifer Kelsey, used to say that this is one of the marginalized groups that if we're lucky enough, we'll all be a part of. I'm her now. And I actually, my partner, John, knows I took a serious fall in Boston. It's like no matter how much you learn about it, right now I'm doing those proprioception exercises to try to prevent the next one. And the thing about oral health is it's not just because we want to chew well, it's because social interaction and participating in life is so important for overall health and well-being. So I don't have to do anything on systems thinking because Dave already gave us a plug. And some of the work that we've done has been published in the American Journal of Public Health, but we're doing so much work now with our students and our mentoring, and we really think that that's a place to go. So I use this description of public health dentistry not to try to say everybody has to think like me, but most of the time when people think about public health dentistry, they think of those do-gooders. They think of those people who work in clinics that take care of the poorest, and that's what public health is. We have a history of taking care of the poorest, but really, we want to move more towards an oral public health. We want to take these circles and make them more overlapping on top of each other, because we're not going to be able to work alone to address the health needs of older adults. And I'm doing a lot of community-based work. Ariel's nodding her head because she has been involved in all of my adventures. We're taking some of our work with United Sikhs, and we're actually trying to do a better job of reaching different kinds of populations than we've done before, going into gurdwaras, going, Jay, where you go, where people are. So the take-home message for my session right here was that we need to address the complex needs of older adults regardless of their ability to pay for services. And innovative programs and improved reimbursement policies are important. But this is not a reactor. This is a reflector, because my original title was reactor. But we all got together yesterday. So instead of really reiterating what you already wrote on your final slides, thank you so much, Vebeth. he wrote down how I can remember to say that. I want to just let all of the panelists know what I'll remember from your sessions. I'll try not to get emotional. It sometimes happens. From your session, I'll remember. Here it goes. Okay, just calm down. Let them eat soup. So your session taught me to really work at countering stereotypes and stigma. The global perspective was so important. Susan, what I'll remember from yours is what happens to the descriptive epidemiology of seniors over time. We're going to have, for race, more diverse race ethnicity. For class, more poverty. And for gender, more women. But it was your last slide that everybody hurried around, which was the really important one, where you did that race times income interaction. And those are the kinds of looks that we need to take of our data. Jay, oh my goodness, what a pro you are. I loved every slide of your presentation. And I want to introduce you to somebody by the name of Hortensia Morrow. She, do you know her? Well, okay. Well, I want you to meet her. She is our new associate editor for Place-Based Research and Interventions. And if you don't get me a paper very soon, I'll be horrified. She just gave a wonderful talk. And Jay, I want you to publish in the journal. David left so I can criticize him. That's what you get for leaving early. One of his slides has improved education equals improved access. Ariel, what do you think about that? For those of you who don't know her yet, Ariel Greenblatt is the first dentist to be an editor of the American Journal of Public Health. And she has her editor's choice coming out in the January issue on oral health across the life course. And she says very clearly there that having coverage does not mean having access. So read that and let David know what your opinion is on that score. For Dave Clark, I am the embodiment of everything he talked about. He is personable, accessible. His slide deck, I'm so glad Ariel's in the room. We're going to download it for Bianca Deering, who was just awarded an administrative supplement on my grant. So with that, I'd like to open the floor for discussion. So happy to be in the room with all of you. Thank you for your attention.
So I'm sure that Jay, Susan, and Vava would love to have questions. See, you're confusing the issue. So, open up for questions, sir.
For HIV, so I don't know if there's something you would hear about.
So yes, I completely agree. You know, there were a lot of diseases that were missing. My focus was basically to, you know, sort of bring the subject to the audience in the sense that we rarely talk about, you know, global health disorders, you know, all over. I mean, like, oral health disorders all over the world. So the purpose of the presentation was to basically tell that, yes, even all over the world, it is, you know, sort of evident that oral health is still a big issue among the elderly. And the four diseases that I really chose were periodontal disease, dental caries, oral cancer, and edentulism, is because the study that I was really focusing my research on was the Murray study. And the Murray study actually had 291 causes and diseases, and of that was the data that was collected by him. And what I really took was all the oral diseases that I could actually find in that. And then I collected the DALYs for those four. And I compared those four with whatever we had on the other, you know, spectrum, like other chronic diseases. And those four were actually collectively, you know, what I've shown in my presentation as, you know, oral health disorders, and then broke them down into four. That's how I did it. Yeah, but I completely understand there were a lot of other diseases that were missing. You know, definitely you're right about Kaposi's and HIV/AIDS, but then there's no clear data that was really available where you could say that, yes, oral health DALYs are being influenced by HIV or Kaposi's. But it's an excellent question. Thank you for having that.
I know we're running a little bit late. We still have time for a couple questions, so who wants to be next? This guy right here. Come on up.
One minute is in my life.
Right. So, sir, when I was actually doing dentistry back home, you know, I mean, I did it in India, not really in the U.S., and I see the segregation of how dentists are always, you know, sidelined. No, it's not really part of medicine. But I completely concur with you that it should always have been part of medicine. Having said that, you know, a lot of, you know, so if you go back to India, a lot of these hospitals, or a lot of developing countries have hospitals where they have a probably a general dentist or a general practitioner who knows a few oral examinations. So it doesn't hurt, actually. You know, even if it, you know, I mean, my personal opinion would be to, you know, train the medical professional over there. You know, this is how you do a general examination. Because I remember in my dental school, you know, we had the general medicine professor who knew, you know, oral health examination very well. But then, you know, he emphasized that, you know, as dentists, you need to learn medicine. But we also need to emphasize that as medical doctors, they need to learn dentistry also. So it goes both ways. That would be my recommendation. But again, you know, I'm really, you know, young as compared to, you know, the plethora of, you know, expertise that you have in this room. So that would be one thing that I'd like to add.
Okay. Anyone final question? Who wants to take? Yes, awesome.
So actually, I don't know if you heard, Susan added something into her talk on policy and about new models of care under the Affordable Care Act. One of the models that we're hoping to do, working with our chair, Rick Niederman, is a dental hygienist model. So Ariel is the one. Again, you have to read her editor's choice. Yes, hello, okay? Right, and please talk with her about a new law that New York just passed, but it's already been passed in other states, where a dentist working at a particular institution doesn't need to be on site in order for a dental hygienist to provide care. So So for Rick's program, he uses therapeutic sealants, and we're into the New York City schools. We've got 1,600 schools and a lot of children that we're going to be able to try some new models of care on. So that's just one of them. But thank you, Susan, for adding that in. I think we're at a great point here where that's our obligation, as you know, to try these new models of care, evaluate them the way that Jay does, and then see what's working.
I just have a comment with respect to older adults. Whenever anybody works with older adults, or if you are an older adult, you know that ageism is alive and well, and when you combine that with other structural inequalities, we find a large group of marginalized older adults who have a voice. So one of the reasons for, I don't think that the issue of financing is going to change until the people who are most affected by the problem find a venue to express their voice. So one of the reasons for working in these sites, all of us, is because it is a way indirectly of creating an empowerment environment so that people with capacity can tell the others what they need and expect and want.
Thank you.